Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Terp fans? Fred, Ryan, and Ahmed back for yet another episode of the Shell and Tell podcast. It's Tuesday, December 12th. It's been a little bit since we've been on the mic, so we got a lot to catch up on, including the Terps football set to head back to Charlotte for the second time this year after securing their bid for the Duke's Mayo Bowl. We break down the 7-5 regular season outcome and the attrition that soon followed.
Yeah, the turbulent times of the portal have led us into micro and macro discussions of both the portal and the NIL worlds that we're living in. Yeah. So we'll get deep into that.
And surely but not last, basketball drops its first two games, but still finds itself inside the top 20 with one more big non-conference game looming with UCLA on Wednesday night. So we'll delve into Kevin Willard, how they've looked over the last week or so, and what's ahead.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a tough stretch.
Those big four games.
Yeah, tough stretch. But first, let's talk a little bit of football. As I said, Terps finished 7-5 on the season, 4-5 in the Big Ten after a big 37-0 win over Rutgers at home to cap off the regular season. This is kind of where we hoped, I think, this team would finish if we were talking about measuring sticks of success and, you know, just making sure that the program is in the right direction, getting to that seventh win in the regular season and then hopefully finishing with 8 in the bowl is where we all thought we would be. And here we are.
Yeah, the beginning of the year, we had our, you know, sights set on a couple of different things. The don't get embarrassed, the, you know, limiting the blowouts.
Yeah,
we had one very embarrassing versus Penn State and one kind of embarrassing versus Wisconsin that just completely failed against the weather. But it was not the huge, constant 35-point blowouts we've been getting used to seeing at the upper echelon of the Big Ten East. And we got an extra win. I mean, wonder how you cut it. And the more and more that I look at it, as we get into this portal discussion, the more I start believing locks that the beginning of the season really is the bowl game. So we might have got a couple extra wins.
That's true.
Yeah, I think you know, 7-5. I think everyone was hoping you get to that 8th regular season win, and obviously you look back, you know, the Purdue game is, I think, the first game that it comes to everyone's mind that, yep, you know, you wish they would have gotten. But I think obviously, you know, being able to get to that, obviously, you know, you haven't gotten to 7 regular season wins in just about 10 years, haven't gotten to consecutive bowl games in about 10 years. So end of the day, from a macro perspective, it's still a positive step in the trajectory and development under Loxley. So definitely can ask for more, and I wouldn't be opposed to that argument, but you have to be pleased with what they've done this year.
And you got to look at who we lost to. I mean, you're talking about, you lost to Ohio State, yeah, Penn State, and who are playing on New Year's Six Bowls. You lost to Michigan, two of them are playing in the playoff. One's playing the New Year's Six Bowl, and the other one won the Big Ten West. So the only person that isn't a champion that you lost to is Wisconsin. It's the only one that really kind of glares out that wasn't, you know, we all know we could have beat Purdue, but they were the best of the Big Ten West. So there's a lot of years we can beat the biggest of the Big Ten West and not the best of the Big Ten East, but it's still not just some slack team that came in here and showed us who's boss.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think everyone would say, you know, the miscues and lack of execution against Purdue killed them. And then obviously just weather would prove to be a huge factor in the road loss against Wisconsin. And then Penn State, you know, they were just completely overmatched. But obviously they were able to take care of non-conference play. A lot of people had SMU on upset watch over Maryland in that week 3 matchups. And so I thought that was kind of good to get that under their belt early in the season. Then, you know, like we alluded to, being able to play both Michigan and Ohio State closer. And obviously, you know, you weren't able to pull out the wins, but for the Ohio State weekend especially, you know, you had guys like Rico Walker, Tamarcus Cooley, Cam Seldon on campus. So you're able to say, hey, you know, these 5 or 6 plays or these These specific areas are what lost us the games. And, you know, here's where we're able to utilize you, and here's why you're able to help us. So it's not the same as, you know, a couple of years ago where you just have to build the foundation. Now you're kind of plucking and filling the holes as needed.
Yeah, and I think the way that the Terps went about it this year was a little bit off of our expectations, a little bit off of our predictions for the year, too. You think we thought this offense was going to be this absolute juggernaut through the air with all the additions that they had at wide receiver, but honestly, nobody on that wide receiver core really took the reins of the offense. Really, the majority of the production came from the running game in a lot of games, and it was super impressive because all of us said, like, they've got a lot of talent at running back, but it's unpredictable. We don't know what's going to come from that group. And then on the defensive side, the secondary was very questionable going into the year. They had some names, but beyond that, they didn't really have a whole lot of depth. But I think, in fairness, they really held their own to above our expectations, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the wide receivers definitely, I think everyone kind of expect a little bit more out of them. And, you know, it's hard for, especially for wide receivers, you know, when the offense, you know, there's only one ball. So all these guys statistically, you know, might not be able to go off each week. But I thought, you know, it was interesting, you know, Jacob Copeland may have gotten a little bit less targets than maybe we expected. Rakim Jarrett, I thought, kind of struggled with drops a little bit. Demas just never showed the true, like, had a complete game where he showed that he was back to his usual self, showed flashes here and there. I thought Deshaun Jones had a good season, but
yeah,
I think just kind of overall.
Hopefully one more good season. Let's go, JJ.
we'll see about that. Not too optimistic about it just yet, but yeah, but we'll see. You know, I think at the end of the day, I do think the receiver room, you know, it's not about just the numbers and stats and whatnot. You could just kind of tell midway through the season that just the chemistry, the timing of the passing game was just kind of off. So, yeah, I thought that was probably the biggest disappointment this season.
Yeah.
I think we also can't, you know, discount the injury of Talia at the end of the Michigan game. It changed a lot of things in that passing offense, in the offense in general. He was not a rushing threat as much as he was after that. The re-injury you saw later made him even less of a threat in that way. So the lower body injury of him this year had really changed a lot of things that could have been that eighth win, that ninth win that everyone started getting excited for. I truly believe we're on the table with a healthy signal caller. We just didn't get that this year.
Yeah. Well, like I said, on the ground is where things really excelled for this team on offense. And I think the guy that led the group, named a freshman All-American, Roman Hemby, third team freshman All-American on the offensive side. Just a hell of a year. That kid's got nothing but upside. And again, with the rotation of backs that they have there, you can kind of keep him fresh. He doesn't need to be out there all game, but he's a big play at any moment, and just really seemed to be comfortable in this offense behind this offensive line.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job this season, and I thought, you know, you always kind of talked about Hemby as, especially out of high school and after he signed, you know, being the home run hitter.
Right.
I thought he was able to kind of show flashes of that and just give the running game some, you know, some of those big plays that they definitely lacked during the 2021 season. So I think kind of running the ball a little bit more consistently will be a point of emphasis again next offseason. Next season. But Hemby definitely did it. It picked up the slack there and had a heck of a first year campaign.
It was great watching him develop. I was super glad being wrong on his side of things. You know, I was the Antoine Littleton truther, wanted more and more of him. I mean, I love Littleton. Thunder and Lightning is something I'd like to keep around these parts, but Hemby proved that he is an all-around back and can do it all for this team. That freshman All-American title was well-deserved, as it was for our other freshman All-American, Jayshon Barham. Only us and Penn State had multiple freshman All-Americans elected on our teams. So really cool to see the Locks keeps bringing in the stars. Let's keep them around. Let's keep building this thing, and we'll be all right.
Yeah, and not only just a freshman All-American, but a first-team freshman All-American. This kid was the real deal at a position that we absolutely needed it.
Obviously, needed it.
Losing Chop, you know, to Penn State, and just needing somebody to be able to step up and make an impact from a pass rush standpoint. You know, he was able to do that, you know, as a will linebacker or, you know, on playing a little bit outside. So I'm excited about his future on this defense. Just hopefully we can keep him around for a few more years.
Yeah. the talent was obvious from the get-go, and you saw the development of him, the being able to play the multiple positions throughout the year, being more utilized and being in the right spot, kind of getting, you know, at the head level to know what this game's doing. So it really, really big things are in store. So, you know, it's one of those names we hope not to hear anytime till next year.
I'm watching your face real close, Ahmed.
I know, right? Well, I think I saw a wrinkle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, just in the modern era of the transfer portal, you know, you're never like there's always going to be some, like, yeah, exactly, like you're never
somebody going to drop a bag,
exactly. So like it sucks, but I think right now he should be back. I'm expecting him back for a second season in College Park.
All right, well, let's get into it, man, because. Right after the season ended, right after we knew that we were going to be in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, it was a season of attrition right away. And it happened with coaching staff first, as we end up losing tight end coach Mike Miller to Charlotte. He goes there to be their new OC under new head coach Biff Poggi. Yep. Pair of Maryland Tide coaches we don't want to see in the Power Five, but they're going to be pulling quite a bit of talent from this area.
Yeah, it's a nice school. We saw it. I mean, if guys aren't hell-bent on being in the Power Five, they're going to get a lot of people from around here. And like you said, let's hope they stay at that level and not come compete, recruit against locks, because I don't want any parts of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Maryland should be kind of in the clear on that. You know, a lot of the guys that Charlotte was able to sign, I mean, a lot of those guys, you know, and it's not to say that, you know, they're not good enough. Like, I don't like saying that they're not good enough, but a lot of those guys, you know, they benefit from going to Charlotte. Like, you know, Ja'Kai Green will be able to go in and be a starter. TJ Butler, Zion Shockley, Luke Hill. I don't know, a lot of people might remember him, the St. John's, former St. Francis cornerback. He ended up getting arrested and spent a year in jail, and Scott out. He did a really good job kind of rehabilitating himself, and he's actually going to be playing at Charlotte next year. So I think a lot of these guys were guys that maybe weren't going to the Power Five level, but I think it's actually good, because I think, you know, St. Francis, we always talk about, you know, I mean, that whole, pretty much a whole starting defense has Power Five offers.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some depth guys that, you know, like Kahari Finley, like he could go to Charlotte and, you know, maybe compete and go into the two deep for the next year or two. So I think it kind of benefits Charlotte, and I get why they went with Poggi, just kind of given the area and being able to, take advantage of just the ample talent that does get overlooked in this area. And then get a guy like Mike Miller, who, I mean,
that hurt.
You're not going to, it does. But I think in a year from year or two from now, you know, I think the way he left, like, it's not going to close the door on a potential return. And you're also just not going to meet anyone that has anything bad to say about Miller. People love working with him. People, recruits love engaging with him. He's a very, he does a good job of being genuine with people. So I think it's a good hire. I think he deserves getting that OC tag. Definitely, you know, was a guy that being under the 35 for 35 list, is a testament to just how good of a coach he is. So I think it's a good move, and could probably help the area with Poggi down there.
So yeah, I got
the thing, Biff. Oh, go ahead. You can go, Fred.
I was just saying, so I got to ask, and again, you know, say what you want, say what you can with this, but I mean, was it just, I know a lot of fans are a little, I guess, not sitting very comfortable with the current offensive coordinator and the way things are going right now. Was this just Mike Miller wasn't ready to be an offensive coordinator in the Big Ten right now, or they don't want to move on from Enos, or is a combination of both? What's your take on that?
I kind of see it as, you know, Miller, this is kind of his first chance to kind of prove that, you know, he can be the sole offensive coordinator. I think this past year, you know, he was able to kind of learn from Enos a little bit. And I think Enos, you know, what the fans don't see is, you know, the everyday, the practice, and Enos, well, you know, the play calling is definitely worthy of discussion this year.
Right.
He's a very good teacher. Like, from a technique perspective, like, he's very good. I'd always heard, and even, you know, Braswell was another guy where you heard a lot of positive talk about how they are able to connect with the players and how they're able to kind of get through to them a little bit. Now, obviously, you know, doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect, but from a coaching perspective, they're that good. So I think Enos kind of gets a little bit of slack there. And, you know, him and Loxie still do work well together, just kind of with their longtime relationship. So I kind of see it as more of the, you know, that mixture, like you said, you know, just not wanting to move on from Enos just yet. And then, you know, giving Miller that full-time opportunity. So Loxie even talked about, you know, he was someone that he advocated for, and Pogge, obviously they have a connection. So, all kind of just worked out that way. So
that's fair. You hate to see him go, but it's fair.
Yeah, you know, it's a good feeling though. At the end of the day, you don't want to see him leave, because he's a good coach, right. Good recruiter, good guy to just have in your program overall. But definitely a well deserved promotion for him.
And since we're like Charlotte experts now, since we went down and watched the Charlotte game, and now we're going back to Charlotte to see the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I just want to say that like Biff Pogge makes sense. Like it just makes sense, because this is a school that popped out of nowhere that seemingly has unlimited funds because it's state money they're dumping into it. They're not having to convince a bunch of old rich white guys to just dump their inheritance into it. They're taxing the city and the state and taking the money and building this into a economic engine. So they're going to make the high risk, high reward higher. And you're not getting Urban Meyer to Charlotte, but Biff Pogge's the poor man's Urban Meyer. Like, there's some stories, there's some background, there's some history, but yet it could work. Like, right. It did at St. Francis. So who knows? I it's very interesting, and it could be a legitimate college very shortly.
McDonald's bags coming to a city near you in Charlotte.
Hope you all like Big Macs.
Yeah, right. all right, so let's move on to the players. I know you kind of already rattled off some names. Before we get to some of the portal movement, let's talk a little bit about the guys that we kind of expected to move on and take the next step in their professional career. Let's talk about the NFL draft guys, a couple of wide receivers. Jacob Copeland, I think this was not the surprise to me. I just don't know how NFL ready he is, but he did declare for the NFL draft. Dante Demas, another one that, yeah, if you'd asked me, you know, before the injury, obviously the future for the NFL draft was high. I don't know where he ranks in the things, but both of them announced that they're heading to the draft.
Yeah, I think, you know, both of those, obviously, you know, expected Demas, obviously, you know, that no brainer. And I think Cope was kind of always, you know, he was an older guy, just, you know, age wise, but I think that the plan was always to kind of spend that 1 year, even though he has an extra year of eligibility left to you know, spend that 1 year in College Park and then go to the NFL. And I personally, like, when I watch him run routes, and I think that, you know, definitely a couple balls that went through his hands. But I think he's going to be a guy, he goes to the league and he's going to flourish. I just think he's, I think he's just such a physical wide receiver, and I think he's good enough as a blocker, and I think he can run a decent amount in that route tree. So I think he's going to be a guy that he's going to go to the NFL, see some production. Where he ends up getting drafted, you know, maybe day three, maybe sneaks into day two. We'll see kind of how he does, but right. I don't think either of them were too much of a surprise.
I guess,
and then a surprise.
Go ahead.
A surprise possible first one off the board, because that was been my question with all the issues going on this year. It looks like Deontay Banks is getting the latest love for the Terp being the first one off the draft board. What do you got to say about his announcement?
You know what? That's a guy. I mean, even going into last season, the 2021 season, I mean, he played what, two or three games last year? Like, he didn't play very much, and NFL scouts were still raving about him. So it's no surprise, you know, to hear the scouts were raving about him again this year. And I thought, you know, he gave up a couple of big plays, especially more so early on than in the latter half of the season. But I mean, checking in at 21 in the in Kuiper's big board right now. I mean, it's very hard for me to remember when, you know, I think when he committed, he was unranked for a couple of weeks, and I think he got a 3-star. But even when he committed under the prior staff, you know, you heard so much about, like, every single time they got to see him more and more, they were just like, bro, he's going to be good. Like, he's legit. And I remember it was like July of that, going into that signing class. And one of the coaches was like, this guy's probably going to go to the NFL. And I was like, we'll see. Like, you just don't know how, you know, if they're just being, you know, super bullish on their class, or if that's valid.
Right.
And I think, you know, he's gradually done that. I think athletically, from a physical standpoint, he's another guy. I think he's going to test really, really well. So, I mean, I don't know that I expected him to go round one, but yeah, day one, day two, definitely definitely, I think, is in the cards for him. And, you know, it would be a big, big boost because it's been a while since Maryland's had a cornerback go that high in the draft.
Yeah. Well, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for that day one draft pick because we thought we had it all locked up with Jalen Duncan, and I just don't see it anymore. So I'm hoping we get to see a Terp announced day one, and I think he might be our best shot.
Yeah. Hopefully he ends up being another JC Jackson in the NFL and makes a great career for himself and get paid, man.
Go collect a bag.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the other name that hasn't been, I guess, officially announced yet that I know most people, including all of us, expect to happen, Rakim Jarrett.
Been talking since before Michigan. So.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the plan. It was three and done, and here we are. So, I mean, any chance that this guy suits up in the bowl game, you think, or you think he's gone?
I wouldn't expect it. Like I'm expecting him to not. And there was definitely at one point, you know, after the two receivers declared, I genuinely, I already have the article ready to go. Like I expected him to announce like the day after, I think it was Demas was the second one to announce. Right. Like I thought it was going to be 3-for-3. And then after that, I kind of wondered if he was going to come back, but, I am not expecting him to come back. I would not be surprised if he ends up, announcing his decision as soon as Tuesday. But I think this is the last we've seen of him in College Park. So, he very well will likely stick true to that, three and done plan.
Well, I hope he doesn't drop any balls at the combine because it's been slippery for him lately. Ever since he talked about the NFL, he must be trying to catch a bigger ball. His hands are still at the NFL size, and he's got to bring it down to that collegiate football.
Yeah, I think he, from what I've heard, he's day three candidate right now, and I think it's a little bit low because day three, you know, I'm thinking, you know, 6th, 7th round pick. And I think he could be a guy that kind of outperforms that. So we'll see kind of how, you know, that process kind of goes about. But it'll be really interesting to see, you know, all these guys, you know, Deshaun Jones, I mentioned, not too optimistic that he ends up making that return for a 6th season. So it'll be kind of interesting to see which of these guys end up going first in the draft.
That one. Deshaun Jones. But still, come on back, man. For a bag of money. Let's go.
Yeah, right. For sure. All right, so let's talk a little portal. Before we dive too deep in actual portal discussions, let's talk a little bit about who's coming, who's going, where we're at with the current roster, because some big names announced the portal movement. So we'll start with the tight end position. This one, I think, hurt the most. A couple of guys that, you know, obviously we have some depth at the tight end position, so I expected there'd be at least one or two guys to leave. The main name on here, I did not want to leave, did not expect to leave, as tight end CJ Dupree announces his name is going to be entered into the portal along with Weston Wolf. Weston Wolf made a lot of sense to me. Obviously, he has connections with Mike Miller and, you know, maybe going to Charlotte. We'll see what happens there. I know he's got some bigger offers too, even bigger than Charlotte. So we'll see what happens. But CJ Dupree, complete shock to me.
It's painful. That's what it is to me.
Yeah, I remember, what was it, day before he entered the portal, I got it. I think it was actually Logan that gave me a heads up, and he was like, hey, you hearing anything about this? I called a couple people, and like I heard, oh, he was in the building all day, and next day he entered the portal. Sounds like there was potential tampering there, you know, whether that was the ultimate decision, you know, kind of we'll kind of see about that. But he's really blown up. It looked like he was going to visit South Carolina, and then Bama met with him, I think, last Wednesday or Thursday, and able to get him down for an official. He got the offer there. Sounds like Ohio State will end up hosting him this weekend, which wouldn't be shocked at all if Dupree lands at Ohio State. But
he hurdled their DB and right into their heart.
Yeah.
So,
guys,
definitely a dagger.
Here's the thing. Yeah. You hate to see him go because you know the kind of potential that he has. But when you start listening to some of the offers he's getting, like you said, Ohio State, Alabama, some of these blue blood colleges, do you blame him? You know what I mean? The bag's probably going to be real nice over there, I'm sure. Going to, again, a blue blood like those two, competing for a national championship. You get one life as a college kid, you know? You get one opportunity as a college kid. And to have somebody give you the opportunity at a potential college playoff scenario, I don't know if I'd turn that down either, no matter how much I love the Terps.
This is just like Chop for me last year. Like, I was hurt, and then I got over it, And I had convinced myself, I said, all right, well, he's going to USC with Caleb. That's fine. Like, go live your best life. Go live out there, you know, in California and hang out with your boys. And you, and then you end up at Penn State and I hurt all over again. Yeah. And so even though this all started with some nut in Ohio, I really hope he ends up taking that Alabama offer or just going somewhere outside of the Big Ten and flourishing, because that's the extra incentive, the extra stab in the heart is having to play them again. Like, right. just go be great elsewhere and leave us alone.
Yeah. 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 It would definitely kind of sting. And, you know, got to be honest, after Chop last year, I think that was a guy I never expected to enter the portal. So ever since then, it's just, you know, it, you know, I'm just kind of numb to it. But yeah, I mean, CJ is definitely the biggest one. And, you know, some news broke on Monday night and I kept hearing it kind of throughout, you know, ever since he announced he was entering the transfer portal that he was practicing and that he was telling people that he was going to play. And Logan DeLizio, my guy, he texted me and said, coaches told him that he is not playing in the bowl game. And then I think at 8:05, he took to Twitter and said that he will not be playing in the bowl game. So, that's the right decision for, yeah. And again, you know, you can't entertain Alabama. You can't go visit Ohio State. Like, you can't entertain all these coaches and then expect to still be in the facilities and suit up in the bowl game. Like, it was just kind of unrealistic in my mind that I just kept waiting for this whole him playing in the bowl game to get thwarted. And, sure enough, it did today.
Well, it's like you said, Ryan. I mean, you know, Loxley has always said that the bowl game starts for the following year, right? And if CJ Dupree is not going to be a part of the following year, then he doesn't earn the right to play in this bowl game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more and more I look at this, like last year, we had a pretty stable scenario going into our bowl. You know, obviously Virginia Tech had the exact opposite and lost everybody, but it didn't feel as true with Loxley saying the bowl is beginning of next season. But now kind of seeing it, like the team we put on the field, even the people that, you know, aren't that big a loss. And we've talked about Ahmed McCullough moving to the transfer portal. Maybe future wise, that's not that big a loss, but he played great minutes for us this year. He was a part of this squad. So for him not to be there, for CJ not to be there, for, you know, these guys have played minutes for us this year, it's Fontaine. Not the same team. Fontaine, exactly. Like, it's not the same team playing. So I kind of get it. I've always thought it was bullshit, coach speak, you know, leaning one way or the other. But I think with the portal, it's just more true now. Maybe it wasn't true 4 years ago, but it feels true now. And if you look at it that way, then we went from 6 wins to 8 wins this year, and it's a much bigger jump. And it's interesting to be on this side of it and kind of see the players leaving, because it was just so not true really for us last year. But I mean, they all left after the bowl, but it wasn't true before the bowl.
Right. So I'll just go down the list real quick. Like you said, CJ Dupree, Weston Wolf at the tight end position, both gone. Linebackers, Ahmed McCullough, Cam Blount, TJ Butler, all gone. DBs, Jayon Venerable, Isaiah Hazel, Shane Mosley.
Played some decent minutes.
He did play decent minutes, all gone. Tackle, Ja'Kai Green, gone. Offensive lineman, defensive lineman, tight end, whatever you would call him, Austin Fontaine, played a little bit of everything.
Fullback.
He's gone. Tyler Baylor, he's gone. And to complete the complete gutting of our defensive line that we got a couple years ago from that class, defensive end Zion Shockley is gone. I don't know how many guys are even left from that class. That was a
Fred, do you remember sitting here going, holy shit,
what are we gonna do with them all?
6 4-stars on the defensive line. What we're gonna do is we're gonna send them to other schools.
Yep.
That's what we're gonna do with
one
them.
By one.
They're just all gonna leave one by one.
I think off the top, was Tyzae Johnson and Tommy A. I think might be the only.
Yeah, King Masote is definitely still here, but I think we had six.
And I mean, you know, just from that group, you know, you talked about Ahmad McCullough, and I think he's a guy. You know, he's, you know, I thought he was a really good integral piece, and I think a lot of people didn't really give him enough credit for his development.
Not at all.
What he just did inside this year, I thought that was probably one of the biggest jumps in development that I've seen over the last couple of years. But you know, a guy like Isaiah Hazel, you know, he. You know, I think he played. I thought at one point he was probably going to start over Dante Trader, and then kind of summer workout started. Trader just gradually took that back, but you know, he'll get a chance to go to another school, smaller school maybe, and be that full time starter. So for a lot of these guys, you know, you kind of get a chance to, you know, find a place where you get a chance to play a little bit more. But again, you know, I think Loxie said last year you should get used to replacing about 10% of your roster. I personally think I've heard a couple more names that, you know, could enter the portal, things like that. So I don't know 100% if this is the rest of it. Wouldn't shock me if there's a couple more. We'll see kind of how things shake out. But again, for the vast majority of it, you're kind of expecting, you know, guys that weren't really in the rotation that, you know, maybe are looking to find time elsewhere. So we'll see how it shakes out. But again, you know, kind of like we talked about with the Charlotte discussion earlier, you know, a lot of these guys would kind of be able to find a good spot for her, maybe prioritize, you know, playing time in these last, you know, year or two of availability.
Well, when you start looking at the position groups, right, you know, wide receiver, obviously you lose a couple guys to the NFL draft. That was to be expected, but you do have some pretty good depth there. Young guys are going to come up and get some shots, get some opportunities. Same thing at the tight end. Yeah, you lose Dupree, you lose Wolf, but we do have some depth there. I think out of all the positions, I think DB is what hurts the most, right? That was the most glaring because obviously you lose one of your starters in Deontay Banks to the NFL. Then you lose some depth behind him. But as much as it hurts and it's painful to watch these guys go, the other side of the portal is who's coming in, right? And we did get our first commitment coming in to the portal, and it starts in that secondary with Cincinnati cornerback Jaquan Shepherd commits to the Terps over UCF, which he is a Florida kid, so that's a big get for the Terps. Ended up having 50 tackles and 10 pass deflections last year. First team All-American Athletic Conference. Played in the college football playoffs last season with Cincinnati as well. So this kid's got a ton of experience, can step right in and fill the shoes of losing a guy like Deontay Banks. So yeah, as much as it hurts us to lose these guys, at least we're attacking and filling those voids with starting and good potential.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy looks like a grown man.
Yeah. So he can, I mean, step in. He looks very good. You know, I've heard his length and size really stuck out, and his ability to move. It moves. He's a very quick corner. So obviously, I think that was a huge addition for them to be able to bring him in this past weekend for his official visit. And I got a chance to talk to him on Monday night. Turns out his mom's in lives in, I think, believe he said Baltimore. And he was also on the same 7-on-7 team back in the day with Jashawn Jones and Fanaji Gote.
Oh wow!
I got a chance to
Maybe you could hang out with Jashawn Jones. Maybe
convince him to stick around.
Just hang out with him.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, obviously, you know, he fills a huge need, especially after Banks left. You know, yeah, that was an obvious need to find that corner. Now I think, you know, Merrill won't rule out a second corner depending on the right fit. And, you know, I kind of posted a couple names on the site, you know, potentially to watch. You know, nothing just set yet. You know, every day everything's changing essentially. But in terms of Shepherd, I thought that was great. It helps give you that starter across from Tarheeb still. So just kind of helps stabilize the secondary a little bit. And then you get, you know, Gavin Gibson, Lionel Whitaker back, and, yep, you know, two deep, so looking a little bit better.
Yeah, and when you start thinking about Cincinnati, man, they've been a bit of a factory for DBs going into the NFL, right? I mean, obviously they have Sauce Gardner in there now doing big things for New York. So, yeah. You know, it's coming from a good program, you know, and everything that you hear about this kid on the field and off the field has been good. So yeah, that's a big get for the Terps.
And his 10 pass deflections, you know, that was, you know, obviously 50 tackles, 10 pass deflections in his 4 years, but all 10 those came last season. And that was after, you know, he talked about, I think I came across an article, he almost hit the portal going into the 21 season. And he talked about, you know, just kind of being able to learn from Sauce Gardner and kind of go from there. So, yeah, I think, like I said, you know, Baker did a good job kind of leading on this one. So definitely a good way to kick off the transfer portal activity.
Any other names you want to tease the fans with that they should be keeping their ears open for maybe coming in? You don't have to give us any giveaways, but any names you want to throw out there, maybe potentials?
Yeah, pay for that shit, Fred.
Check it out on Inside Black and Gold.
it's just the, so I'll give one name, like Nebraska cornerback Jaden Gold. Like, I'd heard his name, but like, I'll still caution, like I just did on the site, like, a lot of this stuff, like the transfer portal is bonkers. And I honestly, about 2 hours ago, was asking myself, how the heck is it only Monday? So like, things just change so frequently. Like, they got a chance to talk with JQ Hardway last week. He's a guy from Cincy, but doesn't really sound like they're going to be a factor there. Turned NIL's a very big factor in his ultimate decision. So I don't know if Maryland ends up going that route. So, like, you know, I've heard a couple, you know, SEC tackles and a couple linemen that, you know, Maryland could see, just got to figure out what, you know, what the schedule looks like and, you know, your timing school. So we'll kind of see what shakes out. I definitely expect there to be maybe a couple portal visitors this weekend, but you know, it's hard to say. Like, there isn't anyone that's imminent like Shepard was.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the last year Loxley has that, or my math is might be right. I think this is the last year that Loxley has that reach into my old friends at Alabama thing. Cause very soon, none of the people he brought there are met right, are going to be at Alabama. Right, so hopefully maybe some of those guys that hit the portal will be getting at least some phone calls. I don't know.
we'll see.
Well, I did want to talk to you guys about the portal, just the portal overall, right? And the way it's currently constructed, or lack thereof construction. As I mean, honestly, I think the portal, in my
opinion, zero construction.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem with it. But it's got its good and it's got its bad. So I really wanted to get your thoughts and ideas on how it, like I said, currently operates. How do they change it? How do they get it right? Because like I said, there's a lot of good they can do. It can help get a player out of a bad situation, like get playing time. We all know that. Coaches changes happen. System changes happen all the time. It gives the player the ability to find the right fit for them. I mean, you only get 4 years in a normal circumstance to play collegiate sports, right? So you want to make sure that you showcase your skills. If your idea is to, you know, be a professional, you want to go to the right system and the right fit. So I like it for that. I do like personally that there's no sitting out periods any longer, that you don't have to wait a year for your, you know, eligibility and to be able to play. Yeah. For me, what we're going through right now, I hate how it pretty much ruins bowl season. I mean, what's the point in end of season bowl games if there's a lot of talent that just ends up leaving after the season? It just makes the bowl game even that much less relevant. And it, to me, I think it has a negative impact on fans and fans wanting to go out because the players that they've been rooting for all year aren't going to be there. They're entering these portal to go somewhere else. So you know, like I said, there's pros and cons to it. The free agency madness of it to the highest bidder and all that stuff, there needs to be regulations, but what's your guys' takes on it? How do you get it right? How do you change it?
Yeah. I mean,
it is eliminating bowl season.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because I think part of it is like when you start to put restrictions on, you know, when the player, you know, they can't enter, you know, X amount of times, or, you know, you have these windows, and like when it becomes so like a constraint on the prospect themselves, that's the whole point of what the transfer portal is avoiding, because, you know, we're no longer in those days where, you know, Randy Edsall can just block, you know, a kid from transferring to school within 100 miles, or block the entire SEC or Pac-12 conference. Or, I mean, that was just like so lame that we used to do that. But I don't know. And I was actually just talking about it with, you know, a buddy earlier. He's, you know, a Tennessee fan. And, you know, just like how do you reel it in? Because the NCAA has lost all ability to authoritate at this point. I mean, you're just not, like the tampering or whatnot, like the, you know, you put in windows and all this stuff. Like at the end of the day, schools are just, you know, timing their tampering right better now. Like yeah, that's what it is. So I don't know if I have an answer, because in order to have an answer, you have to figure out a way to regulate it on a consistent basis. And I don't know how you can regulate it on a consistent basis. I mean, the dead period, I'm, you know, to be completely honest, I have 100%, and this is not like Maryland specific, like this is actually more exclusively, you know, out of state schools, but I've heard of a lot of these schools, like in Florida, these coaches are meeting prospects during the dead period and stuff like that. And, you know, they're arranging all that stuff. And like, you know, that stuff doesn't get caught. That stuff doesn't get reported, but like everyone knows about it. That's like involved in the recruitment. But so like, how do you eliminate that? So
right,
I just think that it's just kind of, the transfer portal chaos is just kind of indicative of just the complete lack of control that the NCAA has allowed. And I don't know how you reel it in now. It's tough. And with NIL the way it is, I mean, maybe one route is you start to put a little bit more guardrails, you know, like Damon Evans has talked about, you know, put more guardrails around NIL, and then track it from, you know, a financial perspective. And then maybe that's a start. But again, you know, it all comes down to being able to monitor. And I mean, salary cap and whatnot. Yeah, you know, if you go that route, you know, you're not talking about college athletes anymore. You're right, talking about employees,
professional athletes. Yeah, they're getting paid.
And then like, and then our schools, are they going to be in charge of having to provide, you know, tax professionals? And like, that's right, like, is that on the players? Like, I mean, I just think that, well, I mean, obviously it wasn't thought of completely, yeah, but I just think that there's just, it's not like a one-stop fix, in my opinion.
Ryan, so I saw a lot of discussion going on Twitter, right, and about this very topic and suggestions of things that they'd like to see change. And one of the guys that's a big follower of the show, I think he actually won our jersey giveaway, Group W Bench on Twitter, right? So he was talking about this. One of the things that he suggested was can't transfer before junior year unless the head coach changes. Do you like that suggestion? So, like, if you really are saying that, hey, yes, giving the player the ability to leave through the transfer portal because coaches have the ability to leave. Well, if you've made the commitment to the coach and the coach isn't leaving, do you think there should be that kind of restriction on it?
The head coach, that was always true, though, even before the transfer portal existed. Like, when the head coach left, they basically, the players were released, had a period where they were able to transfer without penalty. I think you have to at least do like head and position coach if you're going to go down that route. But honestly, I don't even know if that helps, because I always was under the thought that if the bowl mattered enough, people wouldn't do it. You know, we talked last year about how you feel about people opting out of the bowl, and as a Terp fan, whether I'd be okay with it or not. Well, you know, we talked about, if it's a step up, if it's like a big thing for your program, I think you should be there. But like, if you're Alabama and you're playing in the playoff every year, and now all of a sudden you're not, you've played in three playoffs and now you're sitting at home, okay, go for it. You know, do what you're going to do. But like, technically we just took a step up and we got a bunch of people sitting out that were a big part of this team. And I'm not, you know, angry about it. It's not like it was a giant jump. We're not a New Year's Six bowl or something that they're, but to be honest, if we would have won nine games and been playing in the Rose Bowl, I'm pretty sure almost all these players wouldn't be playing in that Rose Bowl. So
I don't know. You asked that Ohio State receiver.
Right.
Jackson Smith.
I do
agree with what you're saying. I didn't mean to.
No, it's fine. I had hope that the expansion of the playoff would save bowl season, and we now know the expansion of the playoff is coming and coming quickly.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to have less hope than I did when we were just imagining it, that it would actually save things, that people would actually play in the bowl games and then go to the NFL, or play in the bowl games and then transfer. I think that people are under, because there's so many players left in the portal that are just sitting there waiting for positions that never come. Everyone wants to be the first name in the portal to be the first name out, because they don't want to be that last 3,000 people sitting in the portal that don't have a gig anywhere. And so there, it doesn't seem to matter the carrot you're hanging at the end of the stick if the real issue is there's not enough spots. There's 8,000 people going for 4,000 jobs. Like, what are you going to do?
I agree with that. I mean, I think in terms of, you know, transferring before junior year, I don't love the rule. I don't know if you can include a position coach, because I think if you do a position coach, I mean, you know, look at Maryland, for example. I think they've had a new wide receiver coach. They shouldn't next year, but they should have a new wide receiver coach in each of the first 4 years under Loxley. So at that point, if you're opening up to can't transfer before junior year unless a head coach or position coach changes, then at the end of the day, it's not making too much difference.
Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same. So I think maybe transfer windows, maybe that's a route.
Interesting. All right. It's just one of those things. It's like I say, it's frustrating. It like I said, it ruins bowl season.
It does.
It's
like Fred said, it's a redraft league.
You would
tweet it out when it happened. It's college football is a fantasy redraft league. You don't get to find your favorite players. Like right now, I mean, Dupree had jumped his way right into our hearts. Yeah. Like, as you know, somebody that we were just like holding on to was going to build this program around, and he's gone. And so now we're sitting here, we're in love with Hemby. And what do we do as fans? We just sit here every day hoping to not hear he's leaving us. Right. And that's a terrible fucking feeling.
I both had the same reaction to, I don't know if it was Ahmed who texted us or somebody, we got an alert that, you know, had Hemby and Barham listed in the main subject line, the first sentence, and I was like, oh, shit. But it was just the announcement of them going to be All-Americans. I'm like,
we had just lost everybody else. Why not?
Exactly. I probably had like 8 different people text me last week being like, I love you, Ama. You do great work, but I hate your tweet notifications.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, I get it, but like, damn. It's just college football is completely
I've muted
changed.
Ahmed for 3 weeks. We'll get back to it later.
Yeah, right. All right, man. Well, like I said, we are going to be in a bowl game for the second straight year. We're going to be in the Duke's Mayo Bowl Friday, December 13th, a 12 kickoff in Charlotte, which this will not be at the University of Charlotte. This will be at the Panther Stadium. What is that? The Bank of America Stadium, I believe is what it's called. I think it's what it is.
It was for a long time. It might still be.
I think that's what it is. So we're going to go in the afternoon of the 29th and leave out the morning of the 31st. So for any of you fans that are going to be down there and want to meet up or, you know, hang out at the game, whatever, we'll definitely be down there. I think it'll be probably 3, 4, maybe 5 of us that are going. Plans are changing like on the hour.
Always.
Yeah.
We're going to play a round of golf somewhere. And then we're also going to play this really cool par three that I'm super excited about. I think it was right down by Charlotte, the Charlotte College, and it's like a par three. Everything's under 100 yards. It's built into like an acre of land. I don't understand how they did it, and I'm super excited to play it, but it was pouring rain our entire trip last time, right. So we were unable to. So as the only benefit of going back to the exact same city a couple weeks later, I'm going to play that golf course. I don't give a shit if it's raining this time. We're just going to put on galoshes and get it going.
So why don't you go over a little bit with the ticket options that the Terps are offering, because I know there were a couple different levels of tickets that you could buy.
Yeah, so they had end zone tickets, lower level end zone tickets for $55, and then for $125, they were described as end zone to midfield, so sideline, I guess is the easier way to put that, right. or club level. There's also a ton of tickets already listed on the Duke's Mayo Bowl website to buy directly from them, which I've considered, but I'm going to be a good Terps fan and let my money go through the school system and let them place me wherever they want, even though I could pick perfectly fine tickets for almost the exact same price through Duke's Mayo. So I definitely had that personal debate today. I was like, oh, I could get my basically exact same season seats. No, let the program say they sold me tickets. It'll help in the future.
I'm looking forward to it, man. We had a great time last year at the in New York at the Pinstripe Bowl. So hopefully we can have three quarters of a good experience, and it'll be a freaking amazing time in Charlotte. So really looking forward to that.
New York was great till about 11 p.m. before the bus. So let's just do the rest of the trip. It'll be fine.
Nine fingers, that guy. All right, man, let's move on to the hard court. Let's talk a little basketball, man. The Terps now sit 8-2 on the season after a huge win over number 16 Illinois at Xfinity Center, which Ryan and I got a chance to attend. Actually, all three of us were in the house, sitting a little different areas, kind of catty cornered to each other. But then they also followed that up with a couple of tough road losses to Wisconsin and last night to Tennessee. So let's talk a little bit about that Illinois win, because like I said, we were there at Xfinity. This was a game that, you know, everybody was calling out for the fan support, get the students there, and they delivered, man. The students came in droves. The fans pretty much filled that stadium. I mean, or filled the arena. There were a few empty seats and whatnot, but the electricity, the energy level from start to finish was high. It had very, you know, similar feelings to how it was years ago. So it was really, really good to see. And I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely a good time. The students delivered, you know, he said they completely sold out. The place was packed out in all the student sections. The high energy, really good. We got the rock and roll part three twice rolling through there. And you could see people a little confused and bewildered. There were people throwing stuff onto the court. I'm pretty sure one of them was an Illinois fan, but they were still going to give us a technical for it. It came from the only section in the stadium with 35 Illinois fan in it. But they're like, yeah, we'll give you all a technical, which is crazy because if I was an Illinois fan, I would just throw it again.
Right.
But you know, it was a good time. You know, all the stuff, the flag drop was cool. The lights were show was awesome. The new intro music is pretty fun. I'm excited to get back down there for this UCLA game this week.
Yeah. And from an on the court experience, man, I mean, this was the last game that the Terps shot the lights out, because it's not been as good the last couple of games. But I mean, yeah, Jameer Young and Hakeem Hart, who were an absolute fire in that game. Jameer Young obviously hit the game clenching three late to seal that game. Again, just a great experience, a great win. It was the real first real test beyond, you know, the tournament that they played in for the Terps, the first Big Ten test, and they passed it with flying colors. But like I said, followed that up with a couple of tough losses. First one coming to Wisconsin on the road, it was a 64-59 game there. Another one where they just couldn't get going offensively. Cold from three. It looked very familiar to what we saw last year, man, with the streaky shooting and whatnot, especially from three. This one was a tough one to lose.
The bigger issue with this one too, though, was comparing the two.
Yeah.
Wisconsin was poor shot choice and we couldn't hit them.
Yeah.
In the Tennessee game, we were getting open looks shots and just bricking them. Like, I had no issue with the shot choice like I did in the Wisconsin game, but just straight bricks in both scenarios.
Right.
In the Wisconsin game specifically, Dante Scott was throwing up any circus shot he could get a hold of for no reason whatsoever because he did not have the hot hand. So it was very, very strange, and he was not the only one. We had a terrible field goal percentage, even though our three-point percentage did catch up in the second half. It was terrible in the beginning of the game. We never really caught up with our shooting percentage. It was bad. Cost us the game. We had a shot at the win. We were, you know, within striking distance late, as this defense has done for us. But you can't shoot like that and come up with anything in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I think, I think it makes sense, you know, especially when you kicked off the season, you know, against smaller teams and whatnot, that you got a chance to see a little bit more balanced scoring. You got a chance to see Jahari Long kind of being able to be facilitated a little bit. And you saw, you know, Ian Martinez kind of provide a spark off the bench, especially scoring that, you know, Maryland kind of maybe had a question mark kind of coming into the season.
Right.
But the last two games, you know, like you guys said, you know, the shooting has not been there. The three-point shooting is something that we saw a concern in the second and third game of the season. But it's a little bit concerning as well that you're not seeing as much balance. I mean, I thought Jameer Young, I thought he played well in both these games. And obviously Hakeem has kind of been able to step in a little bit at times with his shooting and with his versatility a little bit, but it's a little bit of a concern that just the shots are not dropping. I mean, shooting, what was it, 12.5% in the first half against Tennessee? I mean, that's just I'm not sure I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Dante Scott, Ryan. So, you know, Dante's got to be a critical part of this offense. It's got to flow through him. But I'm okay with Dante taking the occasional three here and there because he can make that shot, but that can't be his entire game. And for the last couple of games, that's been it. He hasn't had any kind of low post presence. He hasn't taken any kind of high percent shot. It's down low. It's all been firing from three, and it's,
and he showed all that in the Illinois game,
right?
He hit from everywhere on the court.
Exactly. It was just a complete difference from that Illinois game to these last two. Again, when you really lack size, I mean, that's where he needs to be. Yeah. He needs to be down there with Juju, because I'll be honest with you, as much as I like Juju, Juju's still raw. Juju still has a lot to prove, man. Sometimes he just looks like a wet noodle out there. I mean, he just get kind of, I don't know how to explain it. He just looks soft.
First half of Tennessee was rough. It looked like Bambi running out there. He was tripping over his own feet. He fell down for, I thought he lost his whole knee. Like, I was like, he just fell into this heap, a puddle on the floor. And then as jogging back the other side, he's tripping on his shoe on the ground. I'm like, does this guy's leg falling off? Like, why is no one calling a timeout and taking him on an ambulance? Yeah. And he played the rest of the game. I can't explain it sometimes, but then other times he's got all the offensive moves and he can hit the outside shot. So what are you gonna do?
and it really did hinder Maryland chances to kind of come back, and obviously I think kind of attributed to that for early 17 point hole. I think Tennessee led by as many as 21, but with Dante picking up two fouls 6 minutes into the game, Julian Reese picking up two fouls shortly thereafter.
I think he had three fouls in the first half, right?
Yeah,
he had to sit out for
the last 11 minutes of the game, the first half. So, I mean, you know, against the Tennessee team that was, they were missing, you know, two pretty integral players, but when you have a guy like Julian Phillips, who's just a beast, freshman forward down there, and you know, your two prominent big guys are in foul trouble. You bring in Patrick Emelian, who, again, I think he's a guy that continues to just, you watch the games and you look at the box score and see his stats, and, you know, they never seem to align, but you're still relying on a guy like him. And then Caleb Swanton, Roger, you got a chance to see him a little bit yesterday on Sunday as well. But you know, you can just kind of tell that, you know, he still needs a little bit more time. So,
yeah.
I think that's probably, I think the shots, you know, shot selection, you know, that stuff is streaky. That stuff will come and go, but, Maryland just can't afford to have those types of games where, you know, both Dante and Julian are in foul trouble, especially in the Big
Ten.
You know, against a Purdue team that has Zach Edey, you know, there's a lot of size in the Big Ten. So, I think that's a concern to
me. This Tennessee game was the first game where it was glaring, like the size difference between teams.
They were giants.
They were massive compared to us. And like I said, it's just, you know, Julian's got to be that force down low. He's got to be able to use his size and his physicality to his advantage. And right now he's just not doing that. He's playing too soft. He's not playing aggressive enough. He's playing sloppy that he's getting these fouls, but he's not playing aggressive enough at the hoop, in my opinion. Not going up for hard rebounds. He's not going up with the ball hard because he should be averaging 10 or 12 points easily. And I just don't see it.
Yeah, I agree. But I think, you know, Willard's kind of talked about at times, you know, just the need to get the ball into the paint a little bit more. But I kind of wondered. I didn't think Willard, you know, does too much of it. I think he's very genuine in his press conferences. But, you know, when he talks about, you know, this is Julian's true freshman year.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, I get.
I'm not trying to be too hard on the kid. I'm just being, you know, just trying to be real with where this team is right now.
Yeah.
Because with the way the team is constructed, none of us expected this team to play this good. None of us expected them to get off to an 8-0 start, right? So now our expectations have kind of climbed a little bit. So if we're going to continue that run, then he needs to take that next step and he needs to be that enforcer down low, because who else is going to do it? Nobody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's definitely probably that X factor to Maryland's, you know, postseason success, which, three months ago, I'm not sure we were having that discussion. So,
right.
And yeah, it hurts. But what we've talked about is the defensive effort, the fun things about that has traveled, even though it didn't get W's. You held Wisconsin to 64, even with their gentle rim job. They totally were cheating. They're 6-0 versus undefeated teams. the rim rattled real loud in everyone's speakers for the entire first half. You know, nice soft rim for your 3-point shooting that was dropping, that you haven't hit them all year long. That makes sense. And then at halftime, you decide to rip the rim off the whole backboard with some guy from Milwaukee, because God knows what that has to do with Wisconsin. I don't even know what he was doing
there. He's the Bucks mascot, Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay. We're in Wisconsin, Fred. We're not in Milwaukee. I know. So anyway, he rips the rim off the thing, and then they put a nice tight rim on for us for the second half. So they cheated and they won by 5 points. It is what it is. But the high variance play is what showed up in Tennessee. We got our absolute asses handed to us in the first half, and in the second half we came all the way back to have two shots at overtime within the last 11 seconds. It'd be down 21. You held the number 7 team in the country to 22 point scoring. This is what we talked about. Sometimes with this defense, you're going to be engaged games you don't belong in.
Yeah.
Eye test, we didn't belong in that game. First half,
we
didn't belong in that game, but we got into that game with not very good scoring even the second. It was good, but not like unbelievable. It was unbelievable defense. 22 points.
You're talking about Tennessee now, right?
With Tennessee.
Yeah. Because Tennessee, they shot 11%. 11% in the first half. We were
11%.
We were 2 of 18 from 3. We shot 11%. Like, it was awful. And like you said, even at that point, I think we were only down 19 or 20 at that point. Or was it 21 at that point? Okay, that was like the worst of it was. And then to come back, like you said, I was curious.
Two shots at overtime in 11 seconds and with by Jameer Young, who missed both of them, but you can't hang that on him. He was the leading scorer between both teams, and he had double the next Terp. So Jameer Young had a chance to do it. And the other good thing I did see was Juju in his ear after both those misses, like, bro, it's not on you. This is us. Like, you know, you've had one hell of a game. You put us in here to be competitive. So
it is,
there is a lot to love about Juju. He's always there helping up his fellow Terps. He's always there coaching up people and, you know, keeping the motivation going. So he does need work. He is going to need to put on some size to matter, but, there's a lot of good there.
And make no mistake about it. I mean, this Tennessee team, like I mentioned, you know, they're out a couple of players, but, I mean, I've watched them before. My best friend went to Tennessee, so I've, and I'm not going to lie, I've bet on them a couple of times. Shout out to Legal Sports Gambling. But
no one specifically, because you haven't sponsored us yet.
Yeah, right.
But
we have our favorites though.
DraftKings, yeah, call me.
DraftKings, it's DraftKings. Not even close. But I mean, Tennessee. I think this is a team that, like, you know, I think definitely a Sweet 16 team, potentially a Final Four team. Like, they're legit.
Yeah.
And you know, Ryan, you talked about it. You know, just the defense. I believe Tennessee finished with what, 11 turnovers on Sunday, and I think 8 of them came in the second half.
22 you know, points and a half. Like, that's,
yeah.
If you could expand that out, hold them to 44. Let's go.
Right. And I mean, you know what? At the end of the day, you make one or two more free throws, three pointers, and it's a completely different game. So
in both those games, you hit two threes in both games. We're undefeated still.
So to that point, sticking with three pointers there, because that was going to be my next question. Don Carey, right? So that was supposed to be his specialty, was that he was going to be that lethal three-point shooter, the guy that we could rely on for those buckets late games and, you know, to go on hot stretches and whatnot. Outside of a couple of games on the road early on in the year, he's been pretty bad from three. And it's not just that, yeah, and it's not just he's missing, like, oh, he's hitting the rim and it's just not going in for, I mean, some of these shots are bad, way off target. I mean, hitting the backboard without hitting the rim, the air balls. I mean, it's just, it's been rough. When do we make a change there? Do you think that maybe putting him on the bench and having him come off as a sixth man changes anything?
No, because I think at the end of the day, and I think that was kind of a concern for Maryland this year, you know, you don't really have much proven three-point shooting. I think, you know, Noah Batchelor, I think, like,
I was gonna say,
like, these guys are capable, but, like, Don Carey is supposed to be, like, your guy. And at the end of the day, you know, it sounds cliche, but, you know, let your shooters shoot, get them out of its slump, and then, you know, kind of go from there. But I don't know that Maryland has the roster versatility to, like, tweak. Like, you can't have either Dante or Julian out there and then, you know, move Hakeem Hart at the five, or excuse me, Hakeem Hart at the four, Noah Batchelor at the four. Like, you're stretching yourself too thin, I think, if you're going that route. So I think you have to ride it out and kind of maybe let your defense turn into offense, because it's not like you're going to be able to add a three-point specialist mid-season for them right now. So, I think, you know, just let him fly. But, you know, like you guys talked about, it's the shot selection. It's not about the shots not going in. It's shot selection that kind of needs to be harped on a little
bit. Wisconsin was bad. Yeah, it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
We all knew this four-game stretch was going to be hard. We won the first one, and we've dropped two. So we got a job to do. We got to split this four-game. I think a lot of people would have taken a split to start with. So UCA on Wednesday. Hopefully the fans show up. I think the students will show. Because of the losses and because it's a Wednesday and people get whiny about work the next day, I don't expect to see quite as good a showing as Illinois. But I really hope I'm wrong. I hope we see at least that Illinois crowd and really get that going one more time. We will see. It's gonna be a good time no matter what. I don't care whether you got to work in the morning or not.
Well, this is the game to go to. I mean, you got a little stretch here at home. You got UCLA on Wednesday at 9, St. Peter's on the 22nd, and UMBC on the 29th. So if you want to see good basketball, again, two rated teams in the top 25, UCLA, be there Wednesday, 9 p.m., man. Should be a lot of fun.
Should be
the last real basketball until 2023 against Michigan. So, go out there and watch a game.
Very true. And it would be really cool if five-star Nicholas Harper showed up on Wednesday night again for the game too. So
that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That'd be a good sign.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in as always. We're going to try to be a little bit more consistent over the next couple of weeks with these pods. We'll probably put out one more before we head down to Charlotte just to kind of preview that matchup versus NC State. Maybe we'll even do some live Twitter spaces or something from down there just to kind of touch base with the fans and see where everybody's at, if anybody's going to be down there. So hit up your boys. If you're going down to Charlotte, make sure you guys let us know where you're going to be, where you're going to be hanging out. We'd love to meet you. If you're not already, make sure you're following us on all of our social media networks. Follow us on YouTube at Shell and Tell Pod. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Ryan at Terps B Espert. Follow myself at Fred B L B S. Follow Ahmed at Kafir the Turtle, and make sure you're following and subscribe to Inside Black and Gold. I don't know if you're doing any kind of holiday specials for memberships, Ahmed. It's that time of year. You get feeling, going to give away.
Keep your eyes open, people.
We'll do something closer to the bowl and to Christmas. But yeah, you could say I'm feeling the holiday spirit.
I love it. All right, Ryan, sign us off.
All right, guys. Yeah, sorry for the delay. I was out here, you know, looking at interest in the transfer portal. I wanted to see if there was any interest in a 35-year-old fat man to, you know, get into the trenches here. Figure if Terrence Lewis can be at three schools in 3 years with zero snaps, why can't I get into the transfer portal and just see if there's any interest out there? I think I can play a little JUCO ball. Let's go. I got a few snaps in me.
Oh, jeez.
All right, guys. Well, until next time, let's get down there. Let's watch some basketball. Let's hope football stays healthy and keep the good news rolling. No big names in the portal. Let's stop that. Until next time, guys. Here's wishing all is well under the shell.